Today, has the bank's time come? The DFA day to the 6th of April 2020. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, with the latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Based on media reports of bank commentary, the requests for loan repayment deferrals are coming in thick and fast. Westpac says over 100,000 mortgage customers, or around 8% of their mortgage customers, have contacted the bank regarding the financial hardship deferral process. But there is one important question, which is how will mortgage payment deferrals impact your credit rating? Well, the Australian Bankers Association has been at the press releases again, this time focusing on just this question. They say that any Australian who is granted a six-month deferral on loan repayments on their mortgage or other credit products, such as a credit card, will not have their credit rating affected as a result of that deferral, provided they were up to date with repayments prior to the health crisis. They say the industry has agreed a new approach to credit reporting through the crisis to relieve stress for Australian consumers. Australian Bankers Association CEO Anna Bly said that banks had worked hard to ensure that when repayment deferrals are granted to customers impacted, credit reporting is conducted in a manner that is consistent and fair. If a customer is granted a deferral on their mortgage and other credit products, because of the health crisis, banks will report customers as not having missed a repayment, provided they were up to date when granted relief, Ms. Bly said. Australia's banks are here to support customers who have lost their jobs or significantly lost income because of it, through initiatives such as offering a six-month deferral on mortgage repayments. Customers in these circumstances should not have to worry about their credit rating as well, she said. For those customers who are already behind in repayments when they are granted a deferral due to the crisis, banks will not report the repayment history information and leave the field blank for the duration of the deferral period. When the repayment deferral period has ended, banks will determine how to report the repayment history information. There may be other factors which can affect a customer's credit rating, but customers accepting a loan repayment deferral can rest easy that the deferral will not be one of them, Ms. Bly said. If you are in need of assistance, it's important you contact your bank as soon as possible, with your first port of call being the website or the smartphone app, due to the very high volumes of calls coming into call centres, she said. And Financial Rights Centre CEO Karen Cox said, "People calling our advice services have so much to contend with right now, the stress of not being able to pay their bills, fears for their own health, and fears for loved ones. They should not have to worry about their ability to access credit when this is all over. We warmly welcome the ABA's announcement that their customers' credit reports will be quarantined from the impact of this crisis, and we call on the rest of the finance industry to follow suit," she said. And consumer education website Credit Smart said that Australians impacted by the health issue who are seeking a payment pause or deferral on their loan repayments need not worry about the impact on their credit report. Credit Smart is backed by the Australian Retail Credit Association, which is the peak industry association for consumer lenders in Australia. Due to the fallout from the health issues on people's finances, Credit Smart has witnessed a spike in website traffic and queries on hardship assistance and the impact of hardship assistance on consumers' credit reports. Many Australians who have lost their job or are experiencing reduced income are now unable to meet their debt repayment obligations or are worried about their ability to make payments over coming months. Credit Smart encourages consumers to contact their credit provider directly, as most lenders are offering pauses or deferrals on mortgage repayments for up to 6 months. Many lenders are extending this to other products as well, including personal loans, credit cards, and auto loans. And Mike Lang, the CEO of the Australian Retail Credit Association, said lenders offering payment pauses are making the process as easy as possible, but you do need to advise your lender that you need help. Lenders are aware that some customers are finding it hard to get in touch. There are a large number of people seeking assistance at the same time. Don't worry, you won't be disadvantaged if you are delayed in making contact. However, Mr. Lang warned Australians to be mindful of how they use their credit accounts while any payment holidays are in place. While you might have access to the full limit on your credit card while making no or reduced repayments, you will have to eventually repay back the credit you use, plus any interest charges. If you are under financial pressure, it's best to only use your available credit as a last resort and pay it back as soon as you're able. Under normal circumstances, missed loan repayments are recorded on consumers' credit report as part of the 24-month record of repayment history information. Each month you miss a payment, the repayment information will worsen. However, for consumers who've been granted assistance from their lender, a payment pause or deferral won't show as a missed payment on their credit report. Instead, the repayment history information will either be reported as up to date or no repayment history information will be reported. Additionally, lenders will not list defaults against any consumers that have been granted assistance due to hardship resulting from the health emergency. If you apply for credit in the future, before approving your loan, lenders will take your whole situation into consideration, not just whether you needed help with repayments during the emergency, but also things like what your income and expenses will be going forward, added Mr. Lang. Many consumers subscribe to websites that provide a credit score, but while those scores give customers a snapshot of the information in their credit report, Mr. Lang said most lenders don't rely on that score. And lenders don't just look at the information on your credit report when they assess loan applications. They also consider factors such as your income, expenses, and employment status. These things aren't in your credit report and they aren't factored into the credit scores provided on those credit score websites. And Mr. Lang have emphasized that seeking assistance from your lender due to the health issue will not exclude you from applying for credit in the future. Once the crisis is over, consumers will be back in the market buying properties, cars, and other things on credit. We know that many Australians are currently experiencing financial pressures due to the crisis. Lenders are doing their best to help Australians through these difficult times and get back on track once the recovery begins. If you need help, the first thing you should do is to contact your lender right now and ask what type of assistance is available to you. Now, I think that is right. You should definitely pick up the phone or, better still, use the web to contact your lender. But just bear in mind that deferring payments means you will still have to repay that loan, you will be incurring additional interest, and whilst your credit score may not be affected directly, you will still be required to repay the total loan. And of course, for some, that may be difficult ahead if unemployment stays high for any length of time. So whilst the banks win here, insofar that they will be able to write more credit, you may not. Elsewhere, Westpac said today the RBA has so far purchased $29 billion worth of nominal Australian Commonwealth Government bonds, or ACGB, with another $2 billion to be purchased today. With each passing auction, they said, we get a better idea of how the program will look. And looking back over the last week's auctions, which is week two in the chart, they show that the beginnings of a pattern emerging in the auction size. The RBA kept the first two auctions of the week at $3 billion, the minimum of week one, and then reduced the auction size of the last two auctions by $1 billion. Today's announcement of their intent to buy $2 billion of April 2027 to November 2028 so far keeps within that pattern. They said given that the RBA is making more assured progress toward their targets, they think it's likely that they will taper this week's auction in a similar fashion to last week, meaning the second auction this week will be $2 billion in size, and auction 3 and 4 will be $1 billion, for a total of $6 billion in the week. However, they say, this pattern clearly isn't sustainable. If we continue to taper the purchases in this way, we'd see the RBA buying only $2 billion in week 4 of their program, and no bonds come week 5. On the other hand, keeping up with last week's pace, for example, buying somewhere around $10 billion per week, they said, seems exorbitant, given that the RBA would own around 30% of the ACGB outstandings by the 30th of June. So the question is, where will the RBA settle? And they said, we think that after this week's purchase, they will settle at around $4 billion per week. That would leave the RBA with a government portfolio of around $80 billion by the 30th of June, or close to 15% of nominal ACGB outstanding. If we were using 10% of the GDP as the goalpost for the total size of the program, that means the RBA would have achieved around 40% of its goal in the first 2 months of the program, which is front-loaded and substantial, but also leaves room for additional purchases in financial year 2021. It also means that the RBA is absorbing most, but not all, of the incoming government supply of $6.5 billion a week, under their assumptions, which leaves room for the nominal functioning of markets under increasing supply. So it's worth noting that the RBA interventions here are very substantial and will continue, and is just one stream of their multi-pronged approach. And over to the real estate sector, where in a plan to keep as many real estate salespeople employed as possible, the Real Estate Institute of Australia, along with the State and Territory Real Estate Institutes, have made a submission to the Fair Work Commission to vary the Real Estate Award 2020 in response to the current crisis, according to a report in the Real Estate Conversation. Currently, the award requires that an agent makes at least $54,500 per annum, the minimum income threshold amount, the MTA, for the previous 3 years before they can be employed on a commission-only basis, said Mr. Adrian Kelly, President of the Real Estate Institute of Australia. The REIA has requested that the Commission agree to a halving of the MITA in the current circumstances to keep as many of these agents employed as possible. If this isn't agreed to, with the certainty of decreased sales activity, these agents are at risk of being stood down as agencies struggle to stay open for as long as they can. And feedback that the REAI has had from its member state and territory real estate institutes suggests that these agents would prefer to have the opportunity to continue to work. And in response to this situation, the REIA proposes that the current MITA provisions of the award be changed to 50% of those currently in place for the duration of the crisis, said Mr. Kelly. This is an approach that encapsulates the spirit and intent of the government's initiatives of sharing the burden. So in other words, real estate agents may be kept on the books, but on a higher commission basis. Well, we'll see how that plays out. And finally, there was an interesting piece from John Authors from Bloomberg, in which he says that the sell-off in the first quarter was remarkable for its uniformity. Many stocks fell in alignment. That leads to grounds for hope from the reaction in the last few days. Chris Watling, the founder of Longview Economics in London, points out that advances are exceeding decliners to a remarkable extent. Lots of different investors are placing bets on lots of different stocks, which could be a sign of a bottom. Even if we aren't there yet, though, are there any sectors that look too cheap and are worth buying for the long term? And the answer, which requires, he says, some guts to say out loud, may be the banks. Using price-to-book multiples, the most popular metric for banks, they are cheaper even than at the depth of the global financial crisis in the Eurozone and in emerging markets. The big US banks, considered much healthier, are also approaching those valuation lows. Meanwhile, banks' underperformance compared to technology is growing quite extraordinary. On a global level, using the MSCI All Country Indices for banks and information technology, they have lagged further behind almost without interruption since the first concerns about the mortgage market emerged in 2006. After the credit crisis, it should be of no surprise that banks have stayed out of favour for so long. But this latest dive begins to look overdone, especially in the context of a huge government bailout for commercial credit and for small companies that will be routed through banks and generate fees for them. As Chris Davis, a veteran investor in financials who runs the Davis New York Venture Fund, puts it, in the long run, their business model isn't challenged. The financial model isn't challenged, and long-term earnings power remains intact. Meanwhile, it is possible to buy them for less than their book value of equity, giving substantial protection against further downside. He adds that many bankers are now enthusiastic to have an opportunity to rehabilitate their reputation and play a strong part in aiding the economic recovery. With governments dedicated to keeping banks alive, moral hazard works in investors' favour. And Watling also points out that the long-term trend of technology versus banks has moved into overdrive, departing so sharply from the trend as to appear unsustainable. Inevitably, with the banks, there is one word of caution: Japanification. If protracted sluggish growth and low inflation lies ahead, then the example of Japan's bank stocks since the country's equity bubble burst on New Year's Eve 1989 isn't encouraging. This is the worst case scenario. There is room for great disagreement over the future. Helicopter money may ensure that we avoid Japanification, but instead endure severe inflation for the first time since the 1970s. But the basis for looking at the banks is clear. They are priced very cheaply when they shouldn't be in existential danger, and when other sectors seem wildly overextended. So finally, just reviewing the markets today, the ASX 200 had a big day, up 4.33% to 5,286. The Financial Services Index jumped 4.95% to 4,302. And the Real Estate Trusts were up 5.03% to 1,056. The Volatility Index dropped back by more than 19.5% to 34.71. And the ASX 200 futures is also pointing up 3.42% to 5,250. Amongst the banks, the ANZ was up 4.39% to 16.39. CBA was up 4.12% to 62.24. NAB was up 5.54% to 16.39. And Westpac was up 4.91% to 16.24. The Bank of Queensland was up 3.68% to 5.07. Bendigo was up 2.27% to 6.31. Suncorp was up 4.14% to 9.30. And Macquarie was up 9.39% to 91.58. AMP was up 4.96% to 1.27. And Genworth was up 3.48% to 2.08. McGrath was down 2.78% to 18 cents. And Ilbrick Road was up 3.92% to 5.5 cents. AFG was up 0.39% to 130. Mortgage Choice was up 4.03% to 64.5 cents. And CMAC was up 4.2% to 24.07. The Aussie dollar was up 0.92% to 60.50. The euro Aussie dollar was down 0.42% to 1.7874. The two-year bond was down 1.32% to 0.224. And the 10-year bond was up 0.63% to 0.802. The Aussie gold cross was down 0.13% to 2,695. and the Bitcoin Aussie dollar cross was up 2.88% to 11,706. And just looking to the US tonight, the S&P 500 futures was up 3.62% to 2,573. And the NASDAQ futures was up 3.74% to 7,802. So generally, everybody thinks now that the market is fair value or better. Well, we'll see about that. Before I go, a quick reminder that tomorrow, the 7th of April at 8 p.m. Sydney time, I'll be running an extra live event and Q&A session. I already have a fair number of questions for the show, but if you want to ask a question live, you can do so on the stream or by sending them to me via the DFA blog beforehand. The link is in the comments below. I look forward to seeing you on the show tomorrow. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.